Welcome back to the Cinema Dirtbags. I'm here with my two co-hosts,
Stephen King
and Rick T.
And I'm Scott Decker. This week we're going to be getting into review proper of Nomadland. But before we get into the bulk of the episode, let's get into the dailies. Let's get into the news.
So this week there was some big news that we've kind of came across. It might have been late last week actually when this news broke. There was a casting for an upcoming show. That it's a game that's near and dear to my heart that's being transformed into a TV series on HBO, and that's The Last of Us. I think this sort of redefined for me how stories and video games can kind of work together in a new way. There were some real good stories before, but this was the first time it felt like this is on par. Like, if this was a movie, this could compete with some heavy hitters. This could be nominated for some big awards. This would pull weight. So I was, anxiously waiting this for a long time now, and we've got the news that Pedro Pascal has been cast as Joel, the lead in this show. As far as we know, the lead. I mean, this thing could take a lot of turns and different changes in the narrative, but what do you guys think of that pick?
I'm fine with it. I'm a big fan of Pedro. I like the work that he's done. I think he'll do a fine job. The casting I was kind of hoping for was Joe Manganiello. You've seen him on Magic Mike. You've seen him in Spider-Man. I think his look is a little bit better. Pascal will probably deliver a better performance. But, I guess I'd say I'm pretty happy with the casting for him.
I have not played the game, obviously. You guys know that because you've been trying to get me to play the games for years. I will. I'll get to it.
One of these days.
But I agree with the look thing. Like, just from the pictures of what this cat looks like, Pedro, to me, doesn't fit that bill. I like the guy. I think he's a great actor, but even Joe Manicotti over here, like, he looks more the part, more sturdy built guy, like under all the Mandalorian armor. Pedro's not a big guy. I don't know. He doesn't have the salt and pepper look. Like, sure, that's easy to fix, but I don't know. He just doesn't have the look to me. It'll probably be great. We're probably talking over this for nothing.
Your boy Huge would have.
Huge? The bill. That's exactly right. Oh, I was trying to think of some, like, salt and pepper, handsome son of a bitch, and you're exactly right. Huge Jackman would fill that part, and, well, I guess he's already done it, technically, with Logan. Isn't that the same story?
No, a little bit. When it came out, there was a lot of parallels, for sure. But he crushed it.
he crushed it. Might as well do it again,
Right. And there's one other name that was flown early on for a casting that was interesting. Josh Brolin was another one that I remember hearing early on.
That would have been awesome.
An awesome casting for
there it Joel. Is, right there. Call him back. Sorry, Pedro. You're busy saving the galaxy. Thanos,
he's got
step
the perfect,
on
it. Like, old grumbling demeanor that Joel would have.
He would. I think he would crush it, too. And those two guys were excited me early on. Like, I thought maybe those would be good picks. Also, maybe finding somebody we don't know would have been a good idea, too. I'm sure there's a lot of old grumblers out there that we've never seen act and might just be able to kind of soak into the story a little bit easier.
Casting calls. We need old grumbly. Gray.
But anyway, we'll see. The other casting that was announced is Ellie. They're a big player in this original game here, the original story. And that's Bella Ramsey. I believe of Game of Thrones fame. We'll see how that goes. That one, even more so to me personally, like out of the gate, I was a little bit, hesitant. I don't know if it would have been right for, to be honest and fair, I don't know if it would have been like the casting for me. These two guys we talked about, I always thought would be perfect for Joel, but Ellie's always one that it's hard to put somebody in that role and think like it would fit like a Josh Brolin with a Joel. I don't know. I don't know who it would be in Hollywood, but that's who we've got. Rick, do you feel that Bella Ramsey casting?
I haven't seen Game of Thrones. I mean, as soon as they announced her, I went and looked up who she was. The look isn't really there. Of course, it's Hollywood, so they'll fix her up and all that.
Right.
She's got a heavy accent, too. And I know that's, you can correct that. Obviously, people all the time, Hugh Jackman's Australian. Nails a perfect English accent.
What? It takes a ton of work, though. And I guess, it's going to be tough. You have these people who love this story so much that you can't really just take the game and copy and paste the story. They're going to have to do something different. And that's where it's going to get really interesting is how are they going to change the story and is it going to be to its detriment?
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I approach this one hesitantly, personally. I don't know how they're going to do something even on par with his story or better. So
definitely. That's a TV series, correct?
Yeah, HBO.
Does it say how many? I mean, I guess they haven't filmed it yet, obviously.
Yeah, it's still very early.
No idea how many episodes, anything like that.
No, and I don't even know if it'll be like a because you have two video games out in The Last of Us world right now, and it's hard telling if this is going to be a recurring series, if this is going to be like a one time The Last of Us. Imagine a lot of it kind of hinges on how well it does, but yeah, it's not called The Last of Us season one. We'll say that. It's just right. The Last of Us. So
I did look up who she was in Game of Thrones, and she's actually spectacular in Game of Thrones, and she's age appropriate, I guess. I mean, I like that one more than I do not having Hugh Jackman in the role.
Right. Okay, so... Well,
what's next? What we got next?
First bit of news. I think we had some trailers, one or two, come out.
So the Justice League trailer finally dropped. What did we think of that?
Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Zack Snyder's.
Excuse me.
I will correct myself. No, you're right. Zack Snyder's 4-hour-long Justice League trailer dropped.
I will interject my opinion right out the gate.
Yeah.
I'm excited. And I did not think I was going to be like all the, the film people I follow on the internet or whatever, like, can we stop hearing about it already? And I was like that at first when everybody thought it wasn't going to get made. It was a pipe dream that nothing was going to happen. But then when I actually saw footage, I was like, wow, this looks better than what we got a couple years ago. So I am cautiously optimistic. Like, it looks fun, man. And I don't know. Zack Snyder's got a shoddy record, but overall, he makes shit fun.
I agree.
And I think that this is probably going to be better than old Whedon taking over and make it all family friendly towards the end when the world was imploding and there are demon like fly monsters everywhere and everybody's just cracking jokes. This looks better suited. I'm pretty excited.
I am too. They made that nod there at the end of the trailer. Did you guys see that? There's that meme floating around in a society or whatever, and they kind of poked fun at that, which was that's kind of funny. But
do we like the Joker?
I was gonna say, are your boys in there?
Okay, that's one thing. I'm excited for this, but what are you doing? Leave him out.
He just came back just for you, man. They called him up as soon as they heard.
Looks like he
cinema.
Just smudged some cream, like fudgesicles all over there. Hey, Batman! Hair.
He just got done eating his ho ho.
Yeah.
What is that? Is he trying to do like the nurse outfit that Heath Ledger did, and then just smear? Oh,
I must be the only one that didn't have a problem with the look.
It did have a little bit like I just ate 4 fudgesicles, and I got that same kind of vibe from the makeup, but
it's better than the damaged tattoos and all that.
Yeah,
but why are they gone? Is it just makeup? Did he get them taken off because everybody was roasting him?
Temporary tattoos.
Clown Prince of Crime's got some terrible tattoos. I can't do it. So they just roast him into getting his tattoos lasered off. And you know what his next choice was? Long hair and dookie mouth. Like, what are you doing?
Scott, all this chit-chat's going to get you hurt.
He's going to purr like a cat again.
The one thing that kind of gives me, not pause on it, but I feel like they're kind of setting themselves up with failure with all these new villains. There's supposed to be 5. New ones, in addition to Steppenwolf. I mean, you're talking 6 villains. It's 4 hours long, but when has that really paid off?
It doesn't.
Spider-Man 3,
that's
the one thing I keep coming back to.
Yeah. When you pile them on, it doesn't generally translate.
Especially since the DCEU is, like, dead on arrival at this point. Like, they don't...
You don't have any room for failure. Like,
but here's the thing. How much... He said that all this, 90% of this stuff was already shot, right? So, like, you're going to use that extra money you've got lying around to shoot more scenes with Jared Leto? What? And Joe Manicotti over here, he's got a couple coming in? I don't understand that. I'm still excited. I'll be one of the first people to watch it. But come on, guy. Leave Jared out of it. He's done. No more Joker. You're done. Let's get the Batman straight. Let's get Ben Affleck back in the suit. All right, let's get him back in the gym. Let's get that one coming out. That's what I want out of this. I don't want any spinoffs. I just want another Batman, them to do it right. No more. No, no more Jared Leto. All right? Stop.
I hear you.
But I'm excited for the movie.
Oh. We'll see how he does. It's been a long time coming. We'll...
Yeah, they've been talking about this for...
But he's also doing a zombie movie, too. Like, he's a busy guy right now.
That thing, I'm personally more excited for that. I think that looks extremely interesting. I've only seen a little bit of it, you know, but coming off, and we talked about this before, but his zombie track record is impressive, and if that's the movie he wants to make, then you, I don't know, I have a gut feeling that, with all this DC work going on, if you say, oh, I want to do this, this is something I want to say, okay, well, there's a good chance that might be pretty cool.
I mean, his Dawn of the Dead remake is just spectacular. I do love
that. It's one of
the
few that kind of breaks the old, I guess, rule where they're, remakes tend to fall fairly short.
You put Batista in there, I'm all for it. I'm excited for that. We got one more?
One more. And I think this one is the most recent of the drops, right? That was this one. Just came out. Was it
yesterday?
Yeah, Mortal Kombat. I'm stoked. Okay, I know that growing up on these Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat Annihilation, I know that Annihilation is, I get it. They're more kind of
animality
candy for me, like when I was a kid, like just eating these movies down, kind of like junk food. But I watched Mortal Kombat a lot when I was growing up, and I played the games a good amount too. And to see them embrace the fatalities so much,
it's gonna be disgusting.
Dude, bloody awesome. Which is what we're here for with Mortal Kombat. You gotta, fall into that and really just accept the fact that if you're gonna impress Mortal Kombat fans right now,
lean into it.
Go all the way.
And I think they've done that. Like, I'm not the world's biggest, I watched the original two films and everything, but I'm excited for this. Like, I felt like everybody knows Sub-Zero, and they really... leaned into him in the trailer pretty heavy.
Big time.
As they should. Because even me, who's not a huge Mortal Kombat fan, I know who Sub-Zero is. And they're really putting all their money, they're hedging their bets on Sub-Zero.
What was that crazy shot with Jax? Like, he blows his arms off
ice. Yeah.
And then it's, my God, that's how you do Sub-Zero.
So
they just put him on showcase.
I think they're really trying to break the curse, the video game curse. And this might be it.
Yeah. And Mortal Kombat's done a lot, recently in those games. Like, they bring in, horror villains. Like, Freddy Krueger was in one. And
Arnold's in there.
Yes, he was. The Mortal Kombat series is pretty wicked.
Rambo's in there now, too. You got Arnold and Sly kicking some ass.
It had some cool kills in the trailer, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Sub-Zero was fighting somebody, and he, sliced his armor or something, and blood shot up.
Uh-huh.
And he froze the blood into a blood spike and stabbed him with it. Like, that's...
That's pretty hard.
That's what the fans want.
It's pretty hard. I think all around, this is approved, man. I'm excited for it. We got to go see that one together. Get a couple beers, go see Mortal Kombat. Hopefully, it breaks the curse. Hopefully, that's the sign of things to come. And hopefully, Last of Us will be second.
Yes, well said.
Number one and number two, baby, right there.
Okay.
Real quick, we can get into what we've been watching before we get into the review, guys.
That sounds good to me. Rick, you want to kick it off?
Got anything?
So I mentioned this a couple episodes ago, but I'm still every week tuning into WandaVision.
Yeah.
If you see my Twitter, it's almost a weekly occurrence. I'm on there talking, just raving about this show. It's just expertly executed. The cast is perfect, and they jive well with each other. I wish this was a spoiler-free, or I wish this was, a spoiler episode that I could get into it, but... if you haven't started it yet, get into it. I, for a while there, when things like The Mandalorian and this came out, and they were going to be weekly releases, bummed me out because we're just wired to binge at this point, right?
Right.
But yeah. I'm enjoying looking forward to something every week. I really don't think like The Mandalorian and this would have the same effect for me if I could just mow through it in a night,
Well, who would have thought that, if you would have asked somebody, even a year ago, hey guys, instead of doing this, we're gonna film this whole series, we're gonna dump 10 episodes on you, and you're gonna be able to churn through. If you said, instead of doing that, we're gonna dole them out, maybe an old TV show would have. That wouldn't have been no, that sounds terrible. Nobody wants to wait, but it does. It's the digestion of the episode or anything that takes place.
Yeah,
everything always comes back into popularity.
Damn right.
And Here's hoping that follows through. I really liked it too, The Mandalorian. When the first season's done with this, I'd really like to sit down and talk about it because I'm waiting till it's done just because I'm watching so much else right now. But WandaVision is definitely all queued up and ready to go as soon as they're done.
I think it's smart to do it that way because, you know, episode airs and then you give the public a week to sit on it and a week to cook up theories about who this person is and what's going to happen next. And you keep that interest just constantly churning instead of we're going to flood this all out in a week. It'll be hot for, you know,
it'll trend a month
and then it's gone. So like I said, I think the show is absolutely brilliant. I wasn't very interested in it when the trailers came out. I thought, you know, between this and the Loki show and Hawkeye and the Winter Soldier, this was by far the least one I was interested in. I don't know how they're going to measure up to this. It's that spectacular.
Especially since there's like 12 on the horizon. I looked at something to do with WandaVision the other day in IMDb, and it showed you may be interested in, and it's just like all the named projects coming out and offshoots of Marvel characters. Guys, you're going to the well too many times.
They're going to overflood it.
Yeah.
Well, you get too far into it with these characters that they all do all these spinoffs and you do immediately recognize the difference between an inspired show, which WandaVision does. I haven't watched it yet, but it does feel that way. It does feel like it's a much different flavor than anything else I've seen pitched out there.
It's very, very fresh.
And you do get a lot of those shows that do roll out just like, we're going to put a name on this same kind of template where we're going to give you the same type of show you've been having with all these other characters, but we're going to try to make this character that we're trying to make them more interesting. We're going to give them backstory. These origin stories are a little bit, they're getting tired a little bit. And there's a lot of them that would, you know, I would eat my words, I'm sure, you know, but it's the same time. You keep churning them out. It's going to run ragged.
Right. Yeah, you remember that guy that Mando shot in episode 3? They're going to do a season on him. You're going to figure out what's going on with him and his wife. Wait till the season comes out about his wife.
Oh, no. Stop. You'd fit right in.
Belong on the board, man.
Yeah. Hey, I'm available. No, I'm not Dirtbag Cinema till I die. WandaVision was my what I was watching this week.
Very cool.
Steve-O?
I'm going to kind of carry on with the kind of the episodic, almost like live TV feel here. And this week I'm going to talk about the special released by Joe Bob Briggs. The Joe Bob Briggs Put a Spell on You special for Valentine's Day. Little backstory real quick on Joe Bob Briggs. If you don't know who he is one of the most famous horror hosts in the history of horror hosting. The idea is you have a curated slot of movies, whether Joe Bob tends to do two movies, but as a horror host, you show a little bit of the film and it's interrupted at what would be a commercial break on TV with his commentary. Sometimes he does interviews with directors or cast members of the movie that's playing and just a really cool insights on whatever it's on the screen. And this go around, it was Valentine's Day and they did a double feature of Tammy and the T-Rex was the first movie up. And this movie was put out on disc by Vinegar Syndrome fairly recently in the last year. And up until they re-released it, it was sort of lost. It was the original movie was cut way down for a PG-13 cut that was supposed to be more of like a family film, but ended up just destroying the movie. And it really benefited from this restoration that they did. This is, it's got Denise Richards and Paul Walker in this movie. A very, very wild off-the-rails kind of film. This is kind of like that. The Last Drive-In sort of embraces these oddball movies that you would see at drive-in. With the type of spirit that you would have at a drive-in with these movies. And Timmy the T-Rex is by far no exception. In a nutshell, you have a young couple that kind of a budding romance between, you know, Denise Richards and Paul Walker. There's some things kind of standing in their way. No spoilers. You know, she's some relationships maybe already going on there. And due to a very, very freak accident that is kind of caused by this awful prank that they pull on Paul Walker, he ends up comatose and a mad scientist takes his brain and puts it into this animatronic T-Rex trying to bring this thing to life. And he does. And it's this off the rails, hilarious movie about Paul Walker trying to get back to his girlfriend in the body of this T-Rex. And it's this, the movie that was recovered by Vinegar Syndrome is the gore cut. So there's a ton of just ridiculous kills by this T-Rex, and it's does not take itself seriously. Don't, I mean, obviously from the synopsis here, you can tell this is not one that you're going to go into. You just go in expecting what is kind of on the surface, and you can have a really good time with this movie. There's some really funny performances in the movie, and it was a great way to kick it off. This, I would recommend it to those people who really like some really cheeseball kind of B movies. This is a little bit of horror comedy, so it's a fun time. It's like under an hour and a half, so it's a speedy watch. But you've got the second feature of the night, The Love Witch. And so right after that movie, you followed up with a movie that really honestly didn't. This was my first time watching The Love Witch as well, and I don't. It didn't really feel like a drive-in movie. I mean, it doesn't need to be, but it was kind of, it caught me off guard. It was very, very, I thought the strongest quality of this movie was the cinematography, the way that, just the set design was right there too. It was extremely, extremely meticulous in the way that it was put together. And it's directed by Anna Biller, and she was actually on the show. This was a long double feature. It ended up going from 8 o'clock to up to 1:30 was when this thing wrapped up. So between the movies themselves and the actual the interviews and Joe Bob talking, it was a long, long haul. But it was a very, very cool movie, extremely stylized, you know, a lot of heart in this movie, a lot of interesting points of view, and you just kind of follow this young lady through her life and her love endeavors as she's trying to find. There's some heartbreaking revelations in the movie where you kind of realize that she's desired by these men, like, for the night, but like nobody really wants to be with her for the long haul. And it's really a really interesting take from a female perspective. And I really enjoyed the movie, and I'd recommend it to people who are kind of looking for something, you know, a fresher look. Not really a scary film, but a love potion-y voodoo-esque witch type movie that, you know, it's a good time. I just really wanted to highlight that double feature this week because these are a lot of fun. Joe Bob does series. This is on Shudder. He does like 10 episode seasons of this as well. So hopefully the new season's coming up soon. This will be season 3, I think. And along with these specials that they do for these holidays, it's a great time. And it's live, so people are on Twitter. They're jawing about the movies, talking about them. And you do get that community feel, even though you're not with the people. It's something that's very reminiscent of old, just like time-slotted TV. Everyone tunes in at the same time and talks about it. And you know, you can always stream them later, but there's nothing like catching it with a bunch of people who are excited to watch it at the same time you are. So that's Joe Bob's Put a Spell on You special on Shudder.
I have the Tammy and the T-Rex Blue. I cannot wait to watch that. Love Witch is another one I need to see. Would you say that's like a neon kind of movie?
I don't know if that's the word I would use. Maybe just a very color-soaked palette.
But it was a lot of different colors.
Yeah, but it was more like a...
sometimes they call it neon.
Usually neon. It was meticulous in the way that they chose the colors. It just wasn't sprayed across the screen. It was very choosy, and it worked. It was... colors were used in places to kind of indicate certain moods and feelings.
Do you remember that old car you used to have? It was a Dodge.
Yeah, I never had a Dodge Neon, but I like how that joke would have worked.
The guys are trying to get me to say neons because I'm such a... I've been saying how much I want to geek out about... or how much I geek out over neons every week, and I said I wasn't going to say it this week, but maybe next week. There's always next week. Yeah, oh, this movie is...
We still got a review to do still, so yeah, we'll get there.
We'll keep on rolling. Love Witch and Tammy the T-Rex.
I'll go through mine relatively quickly. AMC all of a sudden decided they were going to do the extended cuts of all the Lord of the Rings movies. But they did it in a messed up way. And I saw Fellowship in IMAX, which was fantastic. And then I looked for the next like 2 weeks out, and I couldn't see Two Towers and Return of the King posted up there. So I got impatient and went home and just watched Two Towers and Return of the King. And then right after I did, I saw they posted them. So I'm kind of pissed that I didn't see the final two chapters in what I'm sure... everybody will agree is a perfect trilogy. I mean, can you think of any three movies together in a series that are that well made? I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's going to happen. Rick.
Godfather.
Well, no, I would say Spider-Man. Godfather was close, except for the third fell short. And I always kind of thought that Return of the King fell short, but after this viewing, and I've seen him 100 times, mm-hmm. I take that back. Still pretty good. I think Two Towers is still my favorite, but Return of the King, it's going up in my estimation. That's why I say probably no three films back to back to back like that are as good.
Yeah, well, the source, the source material on those are impeccable as well. So, I mean, you're talking about a through line of just insane quality from book to screen.
Then he had to piss the bed with The Hobbit, but well, neither here nor there. Yeah. Fellowship, Two Towers, Return of the King, spectacular. One other thing I saw in theaters, I went to the fantastic Screenland Armor, and every Valentine's Day, they show, in a couple days around it, The Bride of Frankenstein. And Bride of Frankenstein's one I've seen quite a few times because my mom's really big into the Universal horror movie monsters, and I really dig them too. Bride of Frankenstein's always that kind of the pinnacle of those movies, and you just forget how kind of it is, kind of goofy, and you know, it's great, it's spectacular. But I will point out two things. One thing is I always forget like how big a deal Boris Karloff was when these movies came out. Like when the original Frankenstein came out, he was a tour de force, right? Like people were like, this is insane. Creatively, like he was kind of, I'm not saying like, oh, what's his name? There Will Be Blood. He's kind of like, he's not Daniel Day-Lewis and like getting, he didn't think he was a monster or anything like that. But like his performance was great. So much so that like, when Bride of Frankenstein comes out, they do something that you rarely ever see. They don't even put his first name. It just says Karloff. Yeah, which is dope if you think about it. Like, how many movies you see, like, Affleck, you know, Clooney. Like, you see it every now and again, but it's probably just for, you know, space on a poster. But they're just like, everybody knows it's just Karloff, man. That's dope. And the other thing, like, apart from the, like, the comedy in this, is kind of slapsticky and funny, but... like, everybody knows the ending. Like, I'm not spoiling a movie that's almost 100 years old at this point. Like, at the end, you know, they make Frankenstein a mate. And she immediately just cock blocks Frankenstein. Frankenstein's monster, the creature, rather, right? So she hisses and she throws a fit. And he's just like, all right, fuck it. I'm going to kill everybody. Like, and this movie is real breezy. The movie's like a buck 15, right? Like, it's like 75 minutes. And, like, I get it. That's how they made movies back in the day. And this is not a knock. I love this movie. Like I said, one of the best Universal movies, if not the best one, right? But at the end, like, all right, we're going to skim over one other thing, is the fact that this movie takes place right after the beginning, right? So Frankenstein has died in, you know, quotations. He's hiding underneath the, you know, the flaming windmill. And everybody knows that Dr. Frankenstein made the monster, right? Everybody knows that he did this. But they're still after the monster for killing people. They're not like, hey, Doc, what the problem is? You're over here making abominations, and then these people start dying again, and it's a monster, and they're like, oh, Doc, you seem stressed, you know? And they don't give a fuck what this guy's doing. Keep an eye on the mad doctor, right? Okay, I digress. We'll get back to the ending. She freaks out. She's not as stable as Frankie is. Like, he's got the mind of a child. She's just got the mind of a mean girl. She's like, I don't want to fuck with old neck bolts over here. So she starts hissing. Pretty much at this point, Frankenstein has learned to talk and stuff, which is pretty sweet. It's really cool. Like, when he meets the Gene Hackman character from Young Frankenstein, he pretty much says, you know, we belong dead. He's only met this broad for like 5 minutes, right? And all of a sudden, he's going to electrocute them to death and take out the other mad scientist. He did not take rejection well. So, comedy-wise, it's great.
Can you blame him?
He's finally got a shorty in his crib, and she's like, hey, nah, it ain't gonna happen.
You gotta kill her at that point.
At that point, I guess you're a monster, so yeah, go ahead and kill the chick. Like, it's great. You should absolutely see it if you haven't. Bride of Frankenstein, do it. But, I don't know, he just really turned on her. He didn't even try to make it work, you know? I mean, how many other people assembled from corpses are you gonna meet? It's not like there's not like a tender for this in 1935 or whatever there was.
Blender.
Blender, that's good. Yeah. But no, it's great every time. I just love that movie. And it's got a wild ending. We deserve to die. Well, I mean, you really just met the chick. I mean, does she deserve to die? Pretty good stuff. Bride of Frankenstein. All right, now we get to the meat and potatoes of our episode. We're going to get into the review of Chloe Zhao's brand new film, Nomadland.
Yes.
So we'll go around, give a, you know, what were we saying? Like a...
like a recommend, not recommend.
Recommend, not recommend. Oh, spoiler free.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Rick, what you got? You just watched this today, just like me, right?
A couple hours ago, yeah. I'm probably not going to recommend it.
Okay.
You got anything to go with that? We're both looking at you pretty hard.
I know. I'm going to get chewed up for this one. I just wasn't that... It's not my cup of tea, and I know I'm supposed to appreciate it. That's the thing, is I know that it's probably a good film, but I'm never going to watch it again. I wouldn't recommend it to a lot of my people that have my similar likes, but I don't...
That's why you're on the cast, buddy. Steven?
This movie's magnificent. But this is also amplified and magnified by the fact that this is the most people I've watched a movie with in the theater since COVID started. There was a handful, and it's not a ton of people. We're all spaced out. We're not sitting. It's all safe. You know, I watched this at Screenland Armor. We're all sort of distanced, but and whatnot. But I was able for the first time in a year look around the theater and see people reacting to the movie. And this was, we talked about how this could be a, like a dose of what we need right now. We said that when we saw the trailer, and I don't think it could have been any more on point. The whole time I was sitting in this movie, watching people interact, living in a world right now where we hardly do, and we're all scared of each other. And this was just a raw look at what people are like, and just a wild like lifestyle. That's so interesting to me. You know, we'll get into this a little bit more for sure, but I just, the last thing I'll say, America, at least the West half of America, could have been billed right below Frances McDormand on this movie, because it is an absolute star of this film.
Absolutely. I agree with everything you just said. Absolutely see this. I'm sorry, Rick. It was spectacular. Loved it from start to finish. Frances McDormand killed it. The western half of the U.S. killed it. And I will follow suit with saying this is the movie we needed during COVID.
Yeah.
Like, everybody wants to take these trips. You know, not everybody wants to live the lifestyle. We'll get into that later. But this is the perfect movie for me to see during this whole crazy shenanigans going on with COVID. And I loved it. I found myself near tears.
Same here.
A handful of times I was engrossed the whole time. And I'm all for it. Loved it.
Right on. Yeah.
I'm definitely going to follow what Chloe Zhao does in the future. Like,
oh, she's the real deal, man. She hasn't had a ton of stuff on her sheet yet, I don't think. Maybe one or two other features.
Yeah.
And this was the first thing I've seen from her.
And I mean, here's one of these things where the hype is real. Like, I think what it already took, maybe not the Palme d'Or, but something very similar, like, of the festivals it's been hitting, it's been just knocking shit over. Like, this is the little movie that could.
Mm-hmm.
And for all intents and purposes, it is a little movie.
Yes.
And it is killing it. And no little movie I've ever seen looks this good. So I think you know where Steven and I stand.
Okay. So with that being said, though, we can really tear the lid off this and talk about what this movie's about, what it means, and kind of how it hit us. We're going to drop the spoiler warning.
Steven, hit that spoiler warning.
Everything after this point, spoilers. Okay. So, Nomadland, spoiler review. Let's go.
Didn't we have a gypsum in Excelsior? Wasn't that thing down the hill from, up the hill from the mill end? Wasn't that the exact same plant? That gypsum thing over to the left hand?
You might be right.
I think because it closed right around the same time, 2011. When they, you know, did the intro and explained why she was doing what she was doing, why she didn't have a home.
Right.
I think that's exactly what was in Excelsior. They just shut down because we never knew what the fuck it was.
Right.
We were just kids. But it just shut down and nobody ever knew about it.
You know, I saw, I was on Letterboxd. One of the reviews said the best movie ever to start with a sentence about drywall factories closing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how this thing kind of kicks off. I mean, you got Frances McDormand's character, Fern. She's basically the victim of the Great Recession. You know, her old man, like, they worked out in, the town is called,
Empire,
Nevada, right? And yeah, it was pretty much centered around this drywall factory.
Yeah, it was a town made to do this job.
Right. And just, they got leveled by the Great Recession. And you don't learn until a little bit later on what actually happened to her husband, but you see that Fern's alone. And that's really kind of that's really all you need to know is she's trying to figure out what to do with her life now. And this whole nomadic lifestyle, I personally was completely captivated by this idea. I know this exists. I know people do it. This is the first time I've ever seen it put on kind of like display like this, where it's just like, it's fascinating.
Absolutely. And I was surprised at how quick they jumped into it, because I thought we were going to see what happened, like, just reading the synopsis, like, before. Yeah. I thought that we were going to see, like, you know, her lose the job, her lose this and that. No, she's already done this. She's working at Amazon, which is kind of like, what, product placement? Did Amazon help make this movie?
I thought that was interesting.
I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
So she's working at Amazon, which seems to be like a seasonal thing, right? And the whole time, she's living in her van, which is like, oh, wow, they started it out right behind the plate, and they're going, and people are talking to her about being homeless and stuff like that. She keeps assuring them, I'm not homeless.
I'm houseless.
Right?
It's just a wonderful line, man.
And
I love that.
She's going from job to job to job, and she starts following a certain group of people,
right,
led by this, he's not very enigmatic, but little Santa Claus. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And she meets this group at Amazon, which I just want to make a quick point. I never really thought about this. I'm assuming this is the real thing. Like the seasonal work, you have this group of folks that Amazon sort of pays their kind of like their rent in a way.
Yes.
They pull up to these campsites. Amazon sort of subsidizes this. They pay for them to stay. They get the seasonal work. They understand that this lifestyle exists and it rolls through every year. And it was just so fascinating to see, like, this whole, almost like this gig thing, like just chase the next gig, get enough money to make it for a while, move on to the next place.
And it's crazy to me, exactly what you said, that Amazon just does this. Like, for, you know, the crazy, you know, capitalist Mongols that they are, right. they're like, hey, let's have these, you know, RV dwelling, tooth not having people just come in, learn the jobs, do them for a couple months, get out. It's crazy. But you immediately meet Linda May.
Right.
Who I thought was just a supervisor at Amazon.
Right.
Because whatever job they do, she's always in a supervisional capacity.
Right.
So I just thought she was a bitch. Right up front, she's like, this is this person, this is this person. And she becomes the greatest person ever.
It was just Bezos on Undercover Bosses. She knew everything.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't like this at all. And then when it starts like unraveling, that like there's this traveling gang of these people.
So she meets them on like a lunch break, right? Like she's on a lunch break and she starts talking to somebody who kind of directs them towards
the
nomads.
Linda May actually brings it up.
She brings it up.
And she says, like, you should come with us when the season's up. Because they all sort of like live there together too. So like they work together and they all essentially kind of like live in the same like campground.
That was one thing that, like, they mentioned that, but that was kind of hard to follow at first, because you keep running into the same, like, David Strathairn, like, and people like that. Like, you keep seeing these familiar faces. You're like, do they all travel together? Because then they're like, oh, I'll see you around this corner. It's like they have a set schedule, which wasn't really put out there.
At first, it felt a little jarring. But then, for me, like, something kind of struck me was it was almost like the lifestyle. The way the characters just kind of pop in and out.
Mm-hmm.
They're just wandering. They don't have like, I'm going to be in. They kind of leave the freedom there for the characters to flow in and out of Fern's life, where it's like, okay, well, these people wander.
And it makes sense for the characters and that, but it's a little hard to watch it. And like, wait, didn't we just see this person? Like, your sense of time is kind of shaken up a little bit.
Right. That's
the only problem I had with it, honestly.
I thought
everything else I loved.
As it went on, it did start to make, once you understood that, you know, because they like sometimes people stay, sometimes people go.
Yeah.
And that's where it does get, because you center on Fern, but like the rest of these folks, they just roll on. I mean, if somebody else has another job offer, they'll just leave or whatever they're doing. Once you kind of understand how this lifestyle works, it did get a little clearer. But
yeah,
at first you're kind
of it was a little hard to follow, but Fern is just trying to live on her own, work, make the money to sustain her lifestyle. That's all she wants to do. And she made it pretty clear with that really kind of heartbreaking scene where that lady's like, after Amazon,
yes,
it's Thursday, you're done. And like, she's like, I suggest you move on to the West, you know, where it's nicer or whatever. She's like, yeah, it's real hard to get a job. She was kind of a real B to her. But you see, like, that's Fern's character. She just wants to be left alone. She wants to earn her money.
Right.
And she wants to just do this thing. But after she realizes she's not going to find work and she's going to be even more homeless than she is right now, she packs up and follows Linda May.
Well, that's one of the things, too, that I noticed pretty immediately and it stuck out to me was, like, this group of folks, you sort of, I guess, like, if you were to ask me before this movie, who are the folks that would take on this lifestyle? I would say maybe some 20-some-year-old yuppies doing their thing. These are all older folks, retirees almost, like, who just want to keep... for whatever reason, whether it's financial or just their, you know, where their heart pulls them, they're wanderers in this older age, and there's like these golden years in a way. And I don't know. I thought that was interesting. It's more than just a dream. It's more than just a Facebook post. I mean, these folks know what hardship is and they live that life. They're not just out here like, oh, I want to live in my van. It's like, well, we do.
Yeah. And they want to live life on their terms, which
right.
is spectacular. And before we get into how great Frances McDormand always is, the first like 20 minutes of this movie, like, everybody knows everything she's in, she elevates. She's one of the best.
Well, yeah,
the pain in her eyes for like the first 20 minutes of this movie until she starts to like really make friends and make you know, acquaintances throughout these journeys, she just looks like
wrecked.
And, like, not many people can just, like, you look at him and you're like, and, like, her limited interactions, like, she, yes, she knows she puts her head down and stuff like that. She's very kind of submissive in, like, that way.
Right.
And it's not until she, like, starts to meet these variety of characters when she opens up and you see who Fern really is.
Yeah.
But, wow, those, I was like, oh, my God, is this going to be the saddest movie ever? Just, like, Frances McDormand just being, like, a sad puppy for...
Well, speaking of sad puppies, like, the other thing, too, where you get that moment where that it illustrates her hesitancy to take on another companion. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort for her to actually follow Linda May down to this group and meet up with them and accept that she's got friends in a community. There's a moment where she has an opportunity to take this abandoned dog before she leaves Amazon, and she just pats it on the head and she walks off, man. And that, I thought she'd come back, and she leaves the dog, and I'm like, dude, that's tearing me up. The dog's just, and she walks off.
Yeah, John Wick on her ass. No. To double back a little bit on your comment about living life on your terms, the scene that kind of grabbed me the most in this was when they were around the campfire, and it may have been Linda May, maybe somebody else. They were telling the story about they've been a corporate employee for 20 years.
Yeah, man.
And they had a coworker who worked all his life. I think he was a week from retirement.
Yeah.
And he was diagnosed with some kind of cancer, lung cancer or something.
Liver failure, I think.
Liver failure. And he had not gotten to take his sailboat out of the garage. Yeah. And before he died, he had told that woman, don't put off your life.
Right.
You know, retire as soon as you can. Get out there.
Don't die with
and
your sailboat in the driveway.
That's a terrifying thought to me.
Yes.
Because it can happen. To put your nose on the grindstone your entire life and never get to enjoy, you know, the fruits of your labor. That's a terrifying thought.
Yeah.
It's really just like the log line of this movie is. Yeah. Go enjoy your life. But we're glossing over, like, the most important fact of the movie is, like, there's only two actors in it, right? Is Frances McDormand.
Oh, right, right.
And David Strathairn, right?
Yeah.
So, apart from that, all of these people are really nomads, correct?
I read that earlier. They actually grabbed a group of real nomads, and so some
if,
of them are.
If you look at the end credits and everything, everybody's names are exactly as they appear.
Right.
So I'm assuming that, I mean, they might have embellished some of these stories, but some of these heart-wrenching stories and why they're out there, why they're doing that, are real life. So, and that's why I was sitting in the theater all by my lonesome going, damn it.
It's cool in that aspect where it's not just a movie. It's almost a documentary.
It has that feel to it.
The first half of it was a lot more documentary than the last half, I think. But it worked. It really did. And just to throw Francis in that mix, you would think wouldn't feel right. But, I mean, she did it, damn it, like she always does. And they warmed up to her.
Incredible moments of camaraderie around that fire and at that campground. I mean, she... They're trading things or trading tips on how to fix up their vans and RVs. And just like, you know, the RV show comes in and they're all walking around these incredibly expensive, like, motorhomes and stuff. And they're just like, this thing has a washer and dryer. No. And they,
oh, they got so jazzed up about it. It was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, she was a 10-year-old girl.
Yeah. Again, you know? Man. And, you know, that whole sequence is just, it's emotionally. It's like a masterclass, man, like on from Frances McDormand on just how to convey like this hesitancy to kind of heal, you know, and that's really like a recurring theme as this movie goes, like accepting kind of what's happened and how to move forward. And well, I mean, I guess like after this whole like awesome sequence where she meets all these people and kind of like finally, like, I guess folded in the nomad crew here.
Yeah.
They all roll off and. This is one of those moments where it's like, it was a little jarring for me. Like, okay, they're leaving. She stays.
How does she know where to go and this and that? Like, the logistics of the whole thing are a little hard to follow at first. But
man, we get introduced. Well, not I don't know if we're introduced here, but we really get to spend time with Swanky.
Yeah, you meet her a little bit before, right. But yeah, you really get to dive into the Swanky character, which, good God.
You know, we find out a lot about Swanky. She's a nomad who stays back. It's just the two of them hanging out where they were all camped out, and Swanky's giving her tips and on how to, like, saying like her van needs a fresh coat of paint.
Yeah.
It's looking a little rough. And Swanky's, you know, considerably older. She, one thing we learn about her in this bit, she's, I don't know what form of cancer she had. But it's moved to her brain and she was only given a few months to live.
It was like 6 months or something
like that. And man, just the way that she talks about it. I mean, this is all, it's so raw. Like every person in this movie, it just hits so, it's so genuine.
Yeah.
So genuine. And like her defiance, I'm not going back to a hospital. I'm going back to Alaska. When she talks about the swallows and her experiences, what she's seen when she's been kayaking. And it's just like this appreciation for nature and what really matters in someone's life. It's just... Oh, beautiful.
This is where I want to, like, read, because, like, literally, I finished the movie and came here. So I want to know, is Swanky still alive? Because I think that is her real name and so on and so forth.
In the credits, it said Swanky.
Yeah, all these people are who they are, but are the stories that they are portraying on screen, are they
right.
Exactly? Because, I mean, I didn't realize before it was a book.
Right, I didn't either.
And, like, I was like, oh, my God, this is the most original story I've ever seen. And I was like, okay, it's a book, but still very, very good. But I really want to know more about these people. Like, I don't want Nomadland 2. Like, I don't want to see Francis McDormand with some, like, Uzis, like, blowing up an RV. I don't want to see that.
I kind of do.
That'd be pretty dope. But I want to know more about these characters. I kind of want to go get the book, you know? A buddy of mine told me that this exact kind of lifestyle, you just throw in mountain climbing and that sort of, like, nature experience. There's a word for that. They're dirtbags.
Pioneers. Well.
Yeah. So, I mean, these people live out of their trucks, their campers, this and that, and they live to do mountain climbing and stuff like that, and pretty much they're nomads with more, I don't know, more workouts. So they're dirtbags.
I thought you were going to say hippie.
Well, no. They are considered to be hippies in some way, shape, or form, but there's actually a book about it, like Dirtbag, this and that, about some guy.
Well, I highly recommend this movie. I changed my opinion.
See, I know I'm going to get shit for this because apparently one of my buddy's very close friends listens to this. So he's listening to this right now, knowing I just botched the name of that book, which he's probably read 100 times. But, you know, I'm just trying to piss him off now because he got real mad about The Office. So now I'm just going to be like, you know, I mean, these guys are okay. Whatever. Dirtbag and The Office. Overrated.
Well, at the end of the exchange where we hit, you know, this great sequence with Swanky, we get her comment, which you sort of see the writing on the wall, where she's like, when it's over for me, basically, I just hope everyone throws like a rock into the fire, you know, for in honor of me.
The foreshadowing was real heavy.
Oh, and it's just like, it's just looming. But man, what a just an incredible exchange there. That I love that whole sequence. That entire thing was just genuine to the core. And I guess like after the exchange with Swanky, we roll off and. Let's see, where does... So Fern rolls from there. Does she head to the Badlands next?
Yeah, I think it's right after that she goes up. And this is where I started to see what they were doing. Because you could see, like, at this point, David Strathairn was in a job, you know?
Right.
And then her and Linda May got a job. So it wasn't just they're, like, living off an inheritance and they're, like, old rich kids or whatever. They're going from these towns to towns to towns. They're taking odd jobs as like
right.
janitors Camp or this hosts, and that. Yeah. Like fry cooks and stuff just to pay their way, which I thought was really interesting how they showed that. I thought that was really, really down to earth and super cool. But I mean,
it's a wild lifestyle, man.
Absolutely. But I mean, as you could see from just these people talking, they do this. Like, I don't know if they have a set like route or whatever.
Yeah.
What's for that? Every year. Their job's waiting for them.
They know the festivals and they know what's going on. So they just plot it out. Right. She makes a comment when she's in the Badlands, I think, about going down to Nebraska because there's some festival going on.
And he said, nope, it's not till later.
Right.
Like that.
And
yeah.
So it's a whole thing that they know where to go. And it's just like a cycle. They eventually make their way back. And it's so cool. I mean, I was completely interested in this.
That scene in the rocks, though. Like, how cool was that?
I mean, and the whole time we're going from point A to point B to point C. I'm going to say it again. It's just the western half of the United States are on showcase in this movie. And it is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the end where I saw where everything was shot because I was like, where's this?
Yeah.
Where's this? I want to take notes because, it's just a visual feast.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're doing, like, tricks with the camera. They're just pointing and shooting. And it is beautiful.
It's beautiful. You're going to want to see this on a 4K iris screen. Which Screenland Theater has.
You watched it at home, didn't you?
I did.
Oh.
I don't have a 4K TV, unfortunately, but it was a pretty...
No,
pretty
I saw it in
a quick
prime.
Turnaround, but I would definitely, 100%, like, if you feel comfortable, you know, see this in the theaters.
Well, yeah, we're giving away our cards right up front. Like, Steven and I want you to see it, and we want you to see it in the theaters if you can.
It's
if you got a big fancy TV, that's fine, too. It's on Hulu, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
But absolutely, if you can see it on a screen,
get out there and make it out to the theaters. Help these people out. Because we are still in the middle of a pandemic.
It's got the biggest big moments and the smallest small moments. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it has the small interactions between people. But, like, for the screen, man, to see these... Like the rock formations, to see the mountains, to see the waves hitting
the Pacific
on the shore.
Coast, dude.
Oh my god!
Well, the juxtaposition of these massive
on
MX4D. Right.
I want the water hit me in the face. I want the full grass in my mouth.
Yeah.
She's cleaning toilets. You want that?
You're... Oh,
I want it all, baby.
It's just that the juxtaposition between like the size of the landscapes and how, you know, it's like it's a humble lifestyle.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of considered like a smaller experience. Everything's kind of scaled down and it's about the bare bones, but yet we're pasting this up against this backdrop of just the most incredibly massive, breathtaking scapes you'll see. And it just works, man. It works in such a great tandem. Dude, we get to the Badlands and just the rocks, and she's just soaking it all in. And she takes on a job up there where she runs back into...
David Strathairn.
Yes, and Linda May.
Yeah.
They run into each other, and they're working the campground. They're camp hosts, and it's just... You know, kind of like that season. They got a bunch of campers going up there to the Badlands, and they're just, you know, making a little money doing that. And I love the scene where she walks up to the dinosaur. And she's just like looking up at it, just her next to it. Man,
it's
great.
A cute little touch that they're always like taking pictures. They're still,
yeah,
like, they're still tourists, you know,
yeah.
And they're getting a kick out of it. One thing to me, one of my favorite scenes was that. So Strathairn is like a camp guide of like the rock formations. Is that the Badlands?
Yeah.
So I thought it was super cute how she was like running away from him or whatever. Uh-huh. And I was like, she's not a younger lady anymore. What Frances McDormand is probably 60s something. And like at this point, she's been nothing but like short with this character, right? And you can see that there's kind of a budding something there, right? So he's like telling all these people how these rock formations were made and everything. And she just takes off and she's like running and she's kind of giddy and stuff like that. And it seems to be that she gets kind of lost.
Yep.
And like he, you know, whistles and stuff like that. And it's kind of like a, even though it's like the fourth or fifth time they've met, kind of a meet cute, right?
Yeah.
And it's adorable. And then
you see anything out there? Rocks.
And I just thought it was filmed really well. It was adorable. Yeah. And I don't know. I was wanting a kiss. Didn't get one.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, guys. You're out here in this beautiful landscape. You obviously dig each other. Lock lips. Didn't do it. Pissed me off.
And it was really, it carried on, like him trying to get her to go with him. Just like that. It was adorable. Like she would say, oh, I'm going to do this. He's like, no, come with me. You know, just kind of wanting to stay with her.
I audibly gasp. When he pulled out that box, I knew those plates were coming. I go, oh! So she had these plates in her RV that were like these, I don't know, collector's things that her dad had forever, right? And she just threw them in her RV. Of all the things she could take, or her van, rather, she really loved these plates. And David, I forget his name in the movie. What is his name? I keep trying to say.
It was Dave.
Dave is trying to help her like clean out some stuff, and she's adamant. I don't need any help. He goes to grab this box, which as soon as you see the box, we as the audience know those are the plates.
Yep.
And he just drops them and they all break. And this is about the time where she's like really opening up to people, and she's like, get the hell away from me. You know, so you're like, no, come on. I want these two together.
It's just so like poetic, really. Like you have the broken plate, and she could have chosen to dispose of it, but she fixes it. She puts it back together and she continues on with this, like trying to reach out to people. And it's this, I don't know. I kind of felt like that symbolism there of her choosing to repair the plate, which could also symbolize her.
Yeah.
She's willing to say, hey, look, I know I'm broken. I'm willing to kind of continue to fix myself and, well, not fix myself, but heal myself and connect with these people. And yeah, from that point, we get like that exchange where jobs are turning, like the camp season's kind of coming to a close, and well, we got to find work. So she decides that she wants to go to Nebraska for this festival. Dave says, nah, that's not for another few months. Come work, basically doing a fry cook job with me up at, and I can't even remember the name of the restaurant off the top of my head, but they,
yeah,
it doesn't seem like they travel too far, but they basically moved from camp, working at the campsite. Now they're working in this, this little, like, Burger Shack or whatever it is.
Big Burger Shack. Yeah. The place is pretty huge, actually.
Yeah.
And I loved that they just go learn a new job, do this. Like, that's stressful to me. Like, I've been at the same job for 8 years, and I still get stressed out sometimes, you know?
Yeah. I'd have cried and went back home.
Yeah, no kidding. They really got to steel nerves, these cats. But at this juncture, you meet Dave's son rolls into town, and it seems that Dave's about to be a grandfather, and there's this allure of, like, normal life pulling him back in, right? Like, the son's like, I want you to be part of the family again, and this and that, and you can see Dave kind of going the other way, but at this juncture, he really wants, he wants Fern to come with him. Like, in these, like, limited interactions, he's really felt, like, a connection between himself and Fern. And she's quick to go, oh, well, I can visit. I can visit. And once again, I don't get my kiss. it just doesn't happen. And then she's on her merry way again.
Well, and it was that he knocks on the door, and she's sleeping, I think.
Pretending to be asleep at this point, yeah.
And she gets up, and by the time she gets out of the car, he's already packed up and left. And what does he leave her?
One of those stones from the Badlands.
Yeah. And he's gone. He's on his merry way. And I think it's shortly after that. There's a really cool, just touching on it real quickly, a really neat scene with she's running into all sorts of people across this track that she's on. And she runs into these folks, and she gives a guy a cigarette and a lighter. It's this younger kid, and she runs into him again, and they have this really interesting conversation where she sort of tries to talk him out of what he's doing.
Yes.
Saying, don't you have people who care about you?
Right. Ask about his parents, right? What do your parents think about?
Yeah.
Right?
Are they worried about you? And it's like, you realize at that point, she feels like nobody cares. Otherwise, you would think she would be back. And that's even more hard because she, you know, so she's lost her husband. You know, we learned that, but we also learned in that moment, I feel like that she feels like none of her other family would really care what's going on with her. Otherwise, she would follow her own advice. He's like, do you have people who care about you? You should, you know, maybe reconsider this. And yeah, that was a really effective moment, I thought, too. But it's shortly right after that, like she has the inevitable van trouble. And
you knew it was coming.
It was coming, man. She has high mileage. When you're driving this thing all over the place and going out in these rough spots, you're going to have some trouble. And she rolls up into she's able to get to the mechanic, and they basically tell her, hey, look, this thing is a beater. This thing's old. It's got a million miles on it, and it's in your best interest to maybe get a new car. And she's like, look, all the work, you see her, like, this is labor of love, the whole movie.
Yeah.
She's putting in, like, different things to help her with countertop space and cooking her food. It's this project. It's her home.
Yeah.
She explains, I'm like, look, I live here. This isn't just a car. This is my home. And so it's going to be an expensive fix. And so she has no other choice at this point but to reach out to her sister. And she's like, can I borrow some money? Can you wire it to me? I'll pay you back. She said, I'll go back. I'm working at Amazon again. I'll go back. I'll get the money and I'll get it to you.
That was great. And you can tell the friction on the phone.
Yes.
And you don't know what she's doing at first because we don't know where she's headed. She gets on the bus and she's right there with her sister. And then they're like best friends, which I thought was weird because obviously on the phone, because she asked her for what, like $3,200 or something like that, or $2,300. It was a sizable amount of money to help her fix the van and live as a hermit again, right? And obviously her sister does not think this is a wise idea. She wants her to come and live with her, much like apparently everybody's family who's a nomad wants to do, right?
Yeah.
And then you get like this weird like other half of her life where she's got like her sister's husband's like really into real estate, which is ironic because she has no real estate to speak of. And they mentioned that.
Yeah.
And like, she's like, you can come stay here with us and do this and that. You know, it seems like a really loving thing until they start talking about their lives. And it is brought up that her life is completely different than almost everybody's.
She has a little friction there. Was it like a brother-in-law?
Yeah.
Where he says something. We can't just drop everything and leave. Just, you think that's what I did? You think I just like threw everything away? Like this whole thing, it's just so emotionally charged. There's not a single scene where it feels forced. It is also genuine. But there's the exchange between her sister and Fern. And she brings her the envelope of money. She gives her the money, but she also says, hey, look, when you left a hole in everyone's life. And she kind of makes a plea there, you know, in the bedroom, like, please stay. And she's like, I can't. She can't live with like a roof over her head. She can't do that. And so, you know, it's sort of a short-lived trip. You know, she takes some money and she heads back and gets her van fixed. And we're back in the nomad life.
And what's the next stop?
So after if I remember right, she drives up to
right after that, she goes to see Dave. And man, Dave's house is killer. I guess it's Dave's family's house is killer. Yeah. Right up there is pretty dope. And man, this is where it kind of like bummed me out because obviously hearing me already, like I wanted to see them.
You're ready for the sex scene at this
point. I'm not ready for the damn sex scene.
It's the Francis McDormand Pound Town sex scene.
That is not what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, how romantic is it that these two people meet?
I just wanted a little over-the-pants stuff.
Oh, my God. Out of control. I wanted this because it was a kind of an adorable meet cute, and I thought it was going to happen.
With you. There was a love interest there that you just
when they started like, you know, going to work at the same places and this and that, and obviously they had similar interests.
Right.
And she goes up there and his family is super like they just accept her.
They want to let her stay in the guest house.
In the guest house. And she doesn't want anything of it. And here's the one like the disconnect for me. I mean, they give you a little bit of her like backstory and what happens and everything, but they don't really say why she's doing it. For my money's worth.
The nomad
life?
They
don't really give you an explanation on why she needs to do this. There are plenty of people whose spouses have died. And this and that. She has the opportunity to start anew with Dave's character, with a family that seems very loving, and like she has the beautiful outdoors right there and the option to go do this from time to time. It's not like she has things like holding her down and she's like, nah. And she dips out without even saying anything. And that's dick move, man.
That's a crazy thing is like this family is perfectly open to bringing this woman into our house.
Straggling
there. That's right. You don't see that.
Right, but she does kind of like, her whole character is about like self-provision. Like she doesn't want to be provided for. And I kind of feel like the reason why she did, this was all inferred because you're right. They don't really make a solid, they don't tell you why, but it kind of felt like she wasn't doing it for any other reason at the beginning other than to run. Like I think she didn't know what to do. So her nomad life was sort of just the result of her trying to run from her inability to process and let go. You know, she never went back. She was just like, pack up, and then she went to work at Amazon. The nomad life didn't kick in until she met Linda May.
That makes sense. Continuing to do it does not to me. I mean, she likes it. I get that. But you could have both. It seems to me that her and Dave could do this together. And that was the one thing that I was like, oh, man, you really kind of shit the bed there.
And it could be that she doesn't want... because she tells Dave he should stay. And it may be, you know, from where she's coming from, maybe she feels like if she's not able to and she says, I have to go, and she tells Dave, Dave won't stay. And she doesn't want Dave to throw away the grandkid and the family that she doesn't have that. Well, I mean, she could have something of a family maybe with Dave, but that's his son and his grandson. And she feels like she will be the thing to break that up. And so maybe that's why she just dips.
I feel like it's just self-sabotage and she's being selfish.
Could be. Yeah.
I mean, when are you going to find another person that gets that 100%?
Yeah. And
oh, you lived in your van? Weird. Me too. It's the craziest damn thing, right?
It's a good question. And I'd
come live with my family in my mansion.
Yeah. Yeah.
With 47 acres.
Right. Well, after she leaves the house is where she goes to that Pacific coast.
Oh, man.
Where the coast is just getting battered by those waves, and she just sort of stands there in the spray. And
did you think she was going to jump?
Part of me wondered for half a second.
There was a lot of talk about Kevorkian and all kinds of dark shit right. in this movie. For her to throw up her arms right in front of that cliff, I was like, no. Like, she just left the possible mm-hmm. love interest and the family and the whole thing. And her immediate thought is like, I need to go to the cliff.
Yeah.
I was like, no, 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 no. And I'm glad that it continued after that. But oh man, that whole scene was beautiful though. Like, man, I want to go right there. Right. I mean, I want to go everywhere where they filmed in this movie because it's great. But there in particular, I thought it was just beautiful.
I mean, when she's running along the coast, I was even like, oh, you're a little close there.
A little close.
Like, bring it back in.
Yeah. But,
you know, I don't know, man. That was up there too, like you said, for like some of those beautiful sequences in, you know, this movie. But
the one shot that I'm surprised you did not mention was the oneer. That has her just walking through the camp. It's in the first, like, third of the movie.
Yeah, it's where, cool. Like, she says she's going for a walk.
She's going for a walk. And it's that one take where she's just walking through. You see the people on the bike. You see the people shooting the shit. People got their fire. You see all the different variations of the camper and the van.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty long take. And it's great. It's spectacular.
Yeah, and she's just kind of slowly like, hey, hey. You said that's on that shy mode.
Very timid at first. You know, she's still got her head down. And she's just, hey, I'm just going for a walk and this and that. Right as soon as the sun's coming up. First off, here's the thing. If I'm going to be a nomad, I'm not going to be waking up at the ass crack of dawn. I can't do that now. If I were to be living on my own terms, I'm not waking up till 5:30 p.m., baby. It ain't going to happen in the sun.
Nighttime nomads. Right. So right after she goes and we get this scare where we don't know what she's going to do, we kind of loop back. Right. We've kind of gone full circle on the year.
Yeah.
Where she's back at Amazon. She makes her way back and she's working her part time again. And some of the most like melancholy moments was when she's singing Christmas songs by herself. She's Happy walking New around Year. With her sparkler in the parking lot. Happy New Year. And she's wearing a little New Year's hat. And it's just like, man, these. It's such a lonely you know, she has, like, to your point, she has all these outlets, but she's just so hesitant to really, really fall into it. Even when she goes and meets these people throughout the movie, she still has a hard time kind of just letting go and letting herself become one with the community again. So, man, yeah, she's doing that, doing it all over again on Amazon. And we get back, she goes back to meet her old group again. And this to me, man, this is where I sort of, the wheels came off for me in the theater.
As soon as you saw the fire, you knew what was happening. As soon as you saw
it. I mean, there's so much emotion in this movie that, but it does a good job of, like, she's got that sharp wit, you know, underneath all that melancholy where she can still kind of make you laugh a little bit with some of it. And there's a nice ebb and flow. But this is where it just, everyone's kind of, they meet back up with the nomads and you have the fire, like Scott said, and what starts happening, they start throwing the rocks in and you know.
Swanky's
passed on, and they do this moment for her, and they kind of join back up. This is Bob's group, Bob Wells' group that she went to at the first place with Linda May when she first kind of officially became a nomad, I guess. And we get, like, he talks, it's kind of neat because at the first time that she goes, she has a conversation with Bob, and it's one-on-one, and it's not as... It's not a bummer, really. They talk about the lifestyle, this, that, and the other. But this time around, they have the same type of conversation, her and Bob. And when he starts telling his story, because she kind of, this is where she finally sort of talks about it. Like, she doesn't talk about her husband that much, and she talks about how she lost him. And Bob comes back and says, I don't talk about my son a lot. And when he hitches... He hitches in his voice. Like, it was almost like knee-jerk reflex. Like, it was something so raw, like, real about it. Like, he says, took his own life. And when he does that, like, it ruined me, man. And I'm looking at, and this was a thing, too, that was so unbelievably powerful. Just, it's these moments. We talk about, I'm going to geek for a minute. We talk about these moments in the theater. Like, why we love going to movie theaters and why they're important. And the things you don't get at home or whatever. And, like, there's a couple ladies down here in front of me just melting. And I'm like, dude, this is what it's about. Like, we're all feeling the same thing at the same time. And that's something that only these type of things can provide. A cinema's so special in that way. And
this one killed me too, obviously. And this is what I want to know more about these characters. Like, if this wasn't really what happened to Bob Wells in real life, he's a spectacular actor.
Unbelievably talented.
I mean, so great. Like,
I want a movie about him. I'd watch that.
The prequel to Bob Wills. Whatever. And the sequel to Nomadland, just her with the Uzis and him with no beard.
I got a prescription.
No, you're right. Of all the scenes that kind of like really brought me to, you know, welling up in the theater, this one, like, let it flow. Because, like, suicide's always hard to hear about. Mm. And, like, as soon as his voice just, you dude, know, oh, man, it killed me because it was unsolicited. You didn't know it was coming until it was too late. And then you were just like, oh, shit, I'm crying in the theater again.
You could approach that scene a million different ways. And most of the time, you'd probably have somebody say, break down completely. Bob doesn't break down completely.
No.
And that is why it's so real. And so he's struggling to keep his composure. But when he lets that little bit of that, he's still raw. That's still raw. He never.
And his reasoning for doing what he does is because of what happened.
Right.
Which I thought, number one, just makes his character. Because at first I was like, is he kind of like a sleazy, like, backwoods, like, cult leader?
Yes.
That's exactly what I thought. But then when you, like, actually start talking to him, I'm like, nah, this guy's all right. Santa Claus is all right, baby.
Yeah. It's not very often you find a very charismatic. A very charismatic Santa Claus looking dude in the desert who's got good intentions.
Yeah, he's like, you need to live in your RVs and I'm going to eat these chicken gizzards.
Oh, God.
That's a callback to Devil All the Time, Rick T.
No, I thought his message in that at the end was cool. He said, you know, I'm going to see my son again.
Oh,
so,
man.
I don't tell people
I'm
goodbye
not trying to
anymore.
Cry.
I tell them, we'll see you down the road.
See you down the road.
That's
good
in the,
Lord.
That line was in the trailer. And normally, if I get hit with something in the trailer, it's, you know, it can still hit, but I'm ready. And it didn't even matter. We'll see you down the road. And he says that when he throws the rock in, he's like, we'll see you down the road. And then he just basically says, I have no doubt that you'll see your husband again. And it's just kind of like what she needed. I mean, I get that because he's this guy who has it all together if you weren't to, if you're watching this guy, like, he knows the lifestyle, he gets it, he seems like nothing can shake this guy.
Yeah,
he's the most like upbeat, like we can make it happen kind of guy. And when he finally kind of shows that, like, we share pain like this, I think that's where she kind of finally feels like, I can do this too, I can make it.
And he mentions that a lot of the nomads are doing this because of shared pain,
right?
Or like trauma that has happened to them, and that's why a lot of them are older.
Yeah,
because they're living through all this stuff, and this is the way for them to get away, have their like camaraderie and everything, but to live life on their terms,
right?
And I think at that point she realizes, oh shit, I'm not really alone.
Yeah.
Like, she's been, like, you know, becoming closer with these people, but it's at that moment she realizes, oh, this is, like, a family.
And just, she takes, from there, she doesn't continue on exactly like how she would have if she was following her little circuit, you know, her jobs. She goes back home.
And I think it's, like, I was thinking about this on the drive over here. Why did they do that? And I think it's, like a saying goodbye.
Yes.
She's done with that shit. And it really didn't occur to me until we started, like, really getting into it. I thought, going back to that, like, barren wasteland, like, sure, it looks good. You can shoot it, and it looks great. It's right there in front of the, like, the mountains and everything. It right. looked great. But I was like, why did she go back? And it's really just closing the door on that chapter in her life, which is great. It's a pretty good way to end it.
You can just feel, like, the ghosts in the like, she walks down that street, and it's just completely... What's really haunting is that the factory was just left. Everything's still there. The helmets, yeah. the chairs. It was like... This could, you know, it's like nobody bothered to pack it up, do anything, board it up.
Godzilla walked by that town and they had to get out of Dodge. It wasn't because nobody wanted sheetrock.
Right. And yeah, when she walks out, those long stretches of just like desert and like the mountains that kind of block off anything. I mean, you could see forever. You feel like if it wasn't for those mountains. And when she walks out the back of that house, she leaves. Yeah, she leaves the house. She sees the view one more time, and she goes off. And that thing wraps with a dedication to those who had to go. And I just... Fern walks out the back door of her house one last time. We get that lingering shot of the mountains, and then we get the card that pops up right before the credits that says, for those who had to go, we'll see you down the road. And you just... You can't do anything but just kind of like marinate for a moment. And again, I've said it a million times. This movie is one of the most genuine pieces of humanity I've ever seen. There's no embellishment. There's nothing but the humanity there. And then the environment, the beauty of the wild, I guess, of the open road, you know, the beauty of that, and then just people. And you really have to hit that, to understand people and to just let them exist and be real. Otherwise, your movie's just...
Like I said, it's the biggest big moments and the smallest small. And it would not work if the small moments don't. Otherwise, it's just these humongous landscapes that are beautiful. And then you get into, hey, girl! And it would be terrible. But this really pulled it together.
Nomadland starring Krusty the Clown.
And, like, oh, man, the small moments were really what pulled it in. Like, seeing the beautiful landscape was just an added bonus. And, I mean, granted, there was a lot of it. It was spectacular. Yeah. But, like, I didn't have to see all of it.
I think it really did help hammer down your small moment. Because it really made you feel humbled.
All right. Do you have anything else to add before we go to a score? Because I got a couple little things I wanted to add in there. Just
please do. Yeah, I feel good about it.
Apart from really loving the movie. Usually, and this is a weird thing, like, everybody's got something they don't like to watch. Like, I don't know, Rick might not like movies about little people, or you might not like movies about, I don't know, Aborigines. I don't know. For me, there's one thing that always throws me off, no matter what kind of movie it is. Movies about, like, really in-depth about poverty. Mm-hmm. Always... It's not that it throws me off, not that it, like, disgusts me. It makes me feel... It, not that...
Yay, poor people.
No, it's not. No. It makes me, I don't know. I didn't have a lot of money growing up. Mm. And it always, like, it makes me feel weird. And, like, I'll continue to watch the movie. But this movie, like, when it started, I was like, oh, this is going to be one of those movies. Like, and usually, I think it circles around drug use in those movies for me. Like, you always see, like, the disenfranchised and drug use. And it always makes for a weird experience. And I never like it. This movie chose to be the exact opposite. I love that. It showed that she had no money. She was working job to job to job, and yet she was empowered.
Yeah.
And she did all this on her own, and it was great. And I was a little trepidatious at first. I was like, oh, no, man, she's pissing in a bucket. And that's, I think that's why I couldn't do this. I would really love to do, like, a longer trip like this. But when it comes to a lifestyle, A, couldn't do it. I have too much stuff. I like my stuff. And two, I'm not dropping a deuce in a 7-gallon bucket.
We should do this for, like, a month just to, you know, return back to the pod with the lifestyle. We should make an experiment out of this.
We do the cast on the road?
Real dirt bags.
Well, Facebook Live, you out in Arizona?
First off, oh, you can't do real dirtbags. I'm not really keen on heights. I mean, we can get up the... I'm not going to, like, grappling hook or anything. But I digress. I don't have a hard time watching poor people. It's just extreme poverty always throws me for a loop.
I know. Film.
And the other thing was you have the really big scenic shots. You have the little things. The thing that really tied it in, which was weird because at first I didn't think I'd like it, was the music.
Yeah.
And like the Ludovico, I cannot pronounce his last name. I'm not trying to ruin his life. I just scribbled something in there. You can't read that.
That's a scribble.
But there was just these like little melancholy, but also kind of upbeat little piano riffs. Like,
beautiful.
And they all sound very similar. I think a couple of them are replays back and back, and there's only a couple of them. But, like, depending on what scene was playing, it went with every single scene. Mm-hmm. Like, if it could be, like, kind of dark, it worked. But it was also kind of triumphant, it worked. And, like, name me another piece of music that, like, you're like, oh, this person's getting stabbed in the gut with a knife. Oh, they're getting married. It works for both of them. So whoever this Ludovico unpronounceable last name is, kudos to you, my man. It was fantastic.
That's a very good
Even
point.
When I will call out the one time where it didn't work is where there was actually those cowboys who were playing in the back of that truck.
Uh-huh.
Weirdly enough, that cowboy was wearing a Sublime shirt.
Yeah,
and he was playing like this, and he had a Sublime shirt. But they were playing music, and then the piano started playing over him, which I thought was a weird overlap. I'm not gonna bitch about it, but I just thought like the guy watching the movie is like, hey, hey, what are you doing? I'll do my Sublime cover, you know, playing that piano music over me.
It did hit perfectly in a couple spots. Specifically, when she's walking on that ledge where the waterfall, but the waves are cresting.
Yeah.
There's that bit in the background. And I think it may be the same piece of music that plays at the very end before the credits.
When she's floating down in her birthday suit in the river,
which surprised me. Good for you, Frances McDormand. When you can do a fully nude scene at your age, at any age, number one, I'm not going to do it, and I'm 31. Right. I'm half-ass proud of my body. Good for you, Frances. And this is what back-to-back movies where people are just naked it up.
But this one, it was just so. I mean, it felt like the return to nature. You know, like she was just in it. She was just floating down this more like a. Korea. Maybe it was a rib. I don't know. It was beautiful.
Whatever.
Unbelievable, man. Just a really cool, just
how freeing
submerging
would that
yourself.
Feel?
Well, I mean, we could just title this Frances McDormand Hangs Dong. And it was spectacular. It threw me for a loop, though, because it just didn't seem like something that, I don't know. Fern
it caught me
done.
By surprise. I'll tell you that.
But I mean, does it, though? Because, like, the second shot of her in the movie is she's, pissing outside, like right by that fence, which is pretty great. But oh man, so good. Good for you, Frances McDormand, to be that.
She better win an Oscar for this.
Her subtlety is, in my opinion, fairly unmatched. Like she has something about her ability to just look at somebody, convey a very, very pointed emotion, or something even a little bit more, you know, kind of under the radar. But she does it with just like two or three things. But it's like you could spend all day. I could spend all day trying to do the same thing with words and my hands, and I couldn't do it the same way she does it with just a look and a half smile or something in that, and just so good.
It's like I said earlier, like those first 20 minutes where she just looks
like broken
at her absolute wit's end, and it's all in the eyes.
Yeah.
Like I mean, she's always kind of has the same like gait, you know, walking around and everything like that. But like you know, her head's down. Those eyes just look so fucking sad, and rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it really just sets the tone for, like, when she starts interacting with these people and you see that half smile come in, it's the smallest little things that she's doing that have the biggest impact. It's so good.
And when you actually, to just to kind of tie back to that last sequence real quick, when she's walking through that house, really, in particular, she doesn't have that look. She's able to convey a sense of almost like hope. Like she's kind of smiling, like yeah. letting go and seeing like she will see him again. You know, she's just letting go of this old bit that she can't take with her, but she can have that hope that she'll see him. And that's, man.
And it's the smaller things. And that's usually when you think, like when you mentioned that she should win an Oscar. I mean, we haven't seen everything for the rest of the year, but this is a hell of a way to start, especially at the beginning of the year. Right. Movies like this usually don't come out right around now, right? So the
bar is set.
Usually you think, like, when an Oscar contender, they're big, boisterous. Like, I mentioned Daniel Day-Lewis mm-hmm. earlier. His There Will Be Blood, like, it's over the top. It's spectacular. This is just quiet. Everything she does is quiet. I think the one time she raises her voice is when old Dave drops her plates.
Right.
Other than that, it's very collected. It's very it's good, but it's also, you know, held back.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Great point about the music. Yes, you can't overlook that. It was spot on. Just subtle enough, kind of like the
at first
the
I didn't think it was going to work. I was like, are they doing the same piano riff over and over again? I was like, yeah, but it fucking works every yeah. time. Got anything else, Stephen?
I am good. I think we've watched this movie. You know, don't just take our word for it. I think we, Scott and I kind of just really...
Rick, you've been quiet.
Geeked.
You've been quiet, Rick. You got anything else to say before we give this bad boy a rating?
It was fine. It was fine.
I mean, you said that Frances McDormand should win an Oscar.
I was being sarcastic.
No, you weren't.
No, you were. You meant it. You know,
if you're willing to go full nudie, you should at least be considered.
So you think that Jason Segel should have won for getting Sarah Marshall?
I think he should have been considered.
As much as he did, as you went too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. For another episode we're doing, I was doing some research online about like overrated and underrated films, right? And I was looking up a list of this and that, and the first thing that popped up was For Your Consideration, Wonder Woman 84. I go, shut the fuck up. Apparently you don't know who we are and what we stand for in Dirtbag Cinema.
For your consideration.
Yeah, not for mine.
Take it walking, buddy.
Rick T, out of four, what are you going to give Nomadland? Let's do something different. Like, a buddy of mine said we need to mix up our rating system, like not just stars. You know, let's do something different, like four minivans, four nudie shots, whatever you got to do. Let's just do something different for this one. Let's mix it up. Four cans of Insta beans or whatever she was eating.
Right.
That's one thing. Like, it showed her, like, really had that stomach thing going on, which was a hard scene to watch, but I think it was almost necessary to, like, show you that kind of lifestyle. She was sitting on her fold-out bed, and all of a sudden her stomach starts gurgling. And she just drops trowel in her little bucket. And I was like, oh, that's got to be terrible. Because all you're eating out there is like canned goods.
But yes.
I digress. Rick, four canned goods. What do you give it?
2.5 RVs out of four.
2.5 RVs. You went for the easy one. Damn it. RVs was going to be mine. 2.5. That's...
Like I said before, when this started, I know I'm supposed to appreciate this movie. But... And it had some, you know, it's an element of the human spirit. You know, you got to keep going and all that.
I was just
kind of sad the whole movie. And I don't know.
But I get it. And I was sad when it started, but it's so hopeful.
I just got to want to watch movies again if I'm going to give them a good rating. And it had a good message, but I'm never going to sit down and watch this movie again.
Did you guys feel like... This I haven't really had this moment. I've heard other people say it. I did pick up immediately on the fact that nobody was masked. I haven't heard people saying that, and that felt
about that. And it really depends. Did they shoot all this last year? Because I find it unlikely, because this movie has a 2020 release date.
Yes, it does. And I don't know when it was.
So that's the thing. The first thing I thought was, I find it hard to believe that these are all right-wing non-COVIDers right
there. But it was set in, like, 2011.
Also, they couldn't do that. They're not going to do that.
But not so much like they're, like, breaking, like, the protocol, but, like, it was the first time that I had been watching something and realized that my life is no longer as, like, right now, it's not as personal.
Yeah.
I've heard people say that, and I've watched a ton of shows and movies, and I've never really had that moment where I'm like, oh yeah, that's weird. They're not. Maybe it's because a lot of what I'm watching is like old, like drive-in horror where it's not the front of mind. But this was like one of these movies about the human spirit, like you're saying, and interacting as people. And I did immediately feel like we don't have that. It wasn't about like, I'm sure they kept everything on, you know, all neat and tidy on their end, but it was just striking to me for the first time watching a movie that this was a year ago before it was the last time that I had been out around people without something covering my face, which does impair. Now you can say, I mean, it is what it is, but it takes away from that. You don't see those little moments. Frances McDormand couldn't have told you what she was feeling wearing a mask, and you felt all of that humanity come through, and we're lacking it. And this was an important movie at a very, at the perfect time.
Yeah. I mean, it still would have hit at any other year. It still would have hit, but its central message may not have gotten through as hard.
Yeah. I think it just me personally. I mean, I do agree. I don't think it would have mattered when this is just an absolute tour de force, but it was just something that I hadn't experienced yet.
Absolutely.
This was the first one that was like, whoa, this isn't society right now. This, I wouldn't see. I mean, maybe out in the rocks, maybe you do. But today, we are missing some interaction in a lot of ways. And I feel it. I feel it.
You know, there are no actual neons, but the color palette in this bad boy, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
That's right. That's right. All right. So 2.5, you said?
2.5 RVs.
I'm going to give this, well, would you say?
No, I'm finished.
Okay. I'm going to give it, out of 4, a very solid 4 sheets of drywall. This whole thing started with the drywall going away. I'm going to give it 4, 4 sheets.
Perfect score.
I think this was, not only was it delivered in a time where we needed it, would have been the same score if it would have been released 5 years ago, 10 years, but it was just so relevant. And I've not seen a movie that examines people like this just so intimately and so raw in such a long time. I would put it in the conversation forever. There are movies that would combat it, but it, you know, a little tug of war, but my God, just, it's like you said, it's just the small moments you have to deliver there. And that's really, this movie does it for the entire running time.
Absolutely.
And you just sit there in the credits and you're just completely, you're knocked off your feet. And that's why we go to the movies, right? And I think that this is a one of a kind experience and it deserves every sheet of drywall I can give it.
So, since we're in this weird time where this movie dropped on Hulu and also is in theaters right now, can we expect a Blu-ray from it relatively soon? Or is that one of the things because if it drops, I'm going to buy it. I want it in my collection for sure.
100%.
But now I'm so uncertain with how people are doing things with streaming and the limited theatrical run. I'm very worried that I'm not going to get to put this on my shelf. As I said before, the perfect movie for the COVID age. Frances is as you said, a tour de force. I loved it. I started off really hesitant. Like the first little bit, I was like, oh no, this is not what I think it's going to be. I think 3.75 cans of beans. And that's only because there's a little dip in the middle, and that's just because it's not Jaws. It's not Citizen Kane. It's not absolutely 100% across the board for me. But, I mean, you can't get much better than this, especially with the drivel we've been spoon-fed in the past little bit. Like, this movie is just a breath of fresh air.
And it's ironically, yes.
It really is, because they're out there breathing in the free air. And it's just so damn good. Like, I don't have my phone up to see what Chloe Zhao, like, she did something of note before this, but I mean, this is big news for her.
Right. Yeah. She looks like directed The Writer and Songs My Brother Taught Me. And also, like,
so they're giving her a Marvel movie.
Eternals. Like a week and a half. Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to,
Are you serious? I was fucking around.
Oh, yeah, Marvel, Eternals, yeah. Director Chloe Zhao.
Oh, okay, yeah, I knew I heard that somewhere. I was like, oh, now they're going to get... What?
What?
The soothsayer over here.
Okay, wow. Oh, the Eternals. Oh, okay, I knew I heard that. That was in the back of my head. Oh, but absolutely loved it. I'd probably go see it again before. I might go see it again before it gets out of theaters just to...
I mean, it's worth, because, you know, there's going to be a handful of theaters, I think, that'll bring it back to for, like, you know, just because of how great it is. And
in award season, if it gets to it, yeah.
But it is, again, if you can manage it, if you can make it, this is a movie to see on the big screen. Absolutely.
I think I heard, and I could have been hearing this conversation wrong. As soon as I left the theater, two older gals were like, I got out of the bathroom and I heard this lady go, the it just wasn't bathroom? My cup of tea. And I was like, I think it was just Rick.
It just wasn't my cup of tea.
I appreciate that. I get it. I think you're wrong, but I absolutely appreciate that.
That's why we have a dialogue here.
It's true. It's a movie that, yeah, you're gonna have some feels. You know,
would I say, watch this over Pirates of the Caribbean every day?
And
that's fucking with you. Oh, so
we just gotta plug in that Hans Zimmer score over her riding Vanguard down the road.
Then I'll watch that. Yeah, I'll watch it again. Good. Then
I mean. Honestly,
put Francis in a pirate hat and I'm with it.
Like I said, I've always wanted to do trips like this.
Mm-hmm.
Limited trips, a week or two, right?
Right.
Do I think that I could make this a lifestyle? Absolutely not. Do I respect those that can? 110%. It's just a spectacular look into a lifestyle I'm not familiar with.
You know,
it's probably the exact opposite for them. Like, they probably look at us who stay stationary and think, wow, you guys are crazy. Just like we kind of look at them that way.
You talk about the Blu-ray release. I mean, how important is it for this thing to get a release and really just sit down with these guys and gals and talk about what they're, like, the real stuff.
Yeah.
Talk to these nomads and say, like, what do you feel about this? Like, how do you, like, what's your life? I mean,
special
like?
Feature-wise, it's got to be packed.
God,
like,
bless. I could.
Four hours of just, like, swanky talking about rocks.
Seagulls. And
yeah. I will watch that.
Absolutely. For sure. Absolutely. Okay, well, so we have the, you know, overall.
Overall positive.
Yeah. I think it's one that sets the bar for the year. You know, it's definitely one that Oscar season coming up. You're gonna want to put this one on your watch list. So I think hopefully do it at the big screen.
And if we got nothing else, I got one last thing to say, and that's see you at the cinema, dirtbags.